Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of I Could Talk Kayfabe. And I'm very excited because we're excited to talk kayfabe. I'm Joe.
I'm John.
And should we talk kayfabe or what are we doing here? Should we talk? Should we talk wrestling? Wrestling clips?
We can talk wrestling clips.
Crips. You tagged me in one. I haven't been able to watch it yet.
Yeah, I tagged you in that. I always want to call it UWC, but it's not, or UCW. It's not that. It's something else. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. So you'll have to watch that for next time. But it's I watched about 2 hours of AWF.
Yes.
The American Wrestling Federation.
The round system. Yeah.
If you are not familiar with AWF, quick rundown. It is a wrestling promotion by, I think it was Paul Alperstein, who was a lawyer? Or he was some sort of businessman.
Yeah. He wasn't a wrestler, but I thought Tito Santana was in charge of booking it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And basically they bought, they treated it like it was, what you call it? It would be like a, like an infomercial. Yeah. Like that's when you would see it. You'd only see it during times that normally infomercials would be on. So like late night Saturday night or just randomly during the day.
Yeah. In Buffalo, it used to be on after Saturday Night Live, but on another channel. Like you'd have to flip the channel to go to when it was on. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just farting around on YouTube and I found a 2-hour compilation, not the entire run, because the DVDs, there's a DVD set that is out there of the majority of the AWF run, and then you have the stuff that's on, you have other stuff that's on YouTube and other episodes. So I remember, yeah, and I've seen it here and there, and I decided just to say fuck it, and I had the DVDs.
Oh, okay.
I had the DVDs at one point, and then I got rid of it, and I regretted it.
Yeah, why would you get rid of it?
I don't know. I think I was just trying to clear stuff out because I was moving stuff, and I was just like, oh, you know what? This is dumb, and I just got rid of it, and now I regret it because it's actually a blast to watch.
It is. It's a cool promotion. It was, I mean, yeah, the roster was like they were all washed up by the time they were doing that. But it was. I don't know. It was what it was. It was fun.
Well, it made me think about how beneficial a promotion like this would be if the U.S. government mandated, not mandated, but it was sponsored, it was a government funded operation, right? Go with me here. So you're a wrestler and you don't have any, and you're retired or you don't have anywhere to work. Well, you can work for work in the government promotion.
Okay.
And it's the AWF and it just plays wherever it plays and it tapes and you go and you work and you get a paycheck and you have a government job working as a wrestler in the AWF. So, your King Kong Bundys can be government wrestling officials.
Was he in it?
No, surprisingly he was not.
Yeah, he's the one guy that should have been in it.
He's the one. He's just notoriously just a pain in the ass, though. Oh. Because he's one of those guys who, I told you the story before how we Monday Night Mayhem, Big Mosh was like, I guess we should get King Kong Bundy. Why, in 2005, doesn't matter. But, we reached out to him and he's like, how much does it cost? How much am I getting paid?
Mm-hmm.
This is via email. So it's I'm not offering, and I don't know if I ever responded back to him. But I just decided that, it wasn't worth our time to talk to King Kong Bundy because that's the thing that he does. And I've heard in other shoot interviews where he basically could have had like a relationship with the WWE, something where it's like, hey, they want to call in some legends. Okay, they call in King Kong Bundy. Not that I'll be honest, not that he's really a legend.
Well, he headlined WrestleMania too.
I guess. I mean, so does that make Lawrence Taylor a legend?
Well, I mean, he's a football legend.
Right. Okay. But I'm saying, but as a wrestling legend, I mean, I don't know. I just always feel like he came, he was a monster wrestler. He was a big deal. And, he headlined the WWE, he headlined WrestleMania 2. And I think actually The Miz actually did bring this up at one point, talking like kind of in a promo, how he went from like headlining WrestleMania to wrestling like a shitball match on the undercard.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what happened to Bundy.
Yeah.
You know, he dropped super far down the card, and then, you know, he just never really achieved any heights, because I think he was just very, from what I understand, very notoriously hard to deal with. So, you know, and the idea, you know, the fact that, you know, he's telling this mom and pop internet show how much you're going to pay me to, for me to interview you, it's like, that's not really, you know, good business. At least in the podcasting thing, because I, at least as far as I, as far as I'm concerned, I am never going to pay for a guest to do a podcast.
No, not for a podcast.
Either you do it or you don't want to do it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Totally. He was famous enough to be named they named the family and Married with Children after him. The creators were big wrestling fans. Yeah. That's why they were the Bundys.
That's right.
And then he appeared in an episode of Married with Children.
He did, yeah. He did. Yeah. He was like Peg's brother.
Yeah.
Or Peg's cousin. Somebody probably out there is probably like, he was his uncle or he was something.
Yeah. And that's why the Rhodes were the next door neighbors.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's why they were named the Rhodes.
Yep. Interesting. I watched AWF. King Kong Bundy was not in there, but we had, you know, you had your.
Who was their resident fat guy? Did they have one?
Did they? Who was a resident fat guy?
Yeah. I don't think they had one.
They had a guy. Oh, he was a face. He was known as Hurricane Smith. And he sucked.
Oh. Okay.
He was a really, like, he looked like a giant trucker man. Like, he basically looked like Silo Sam, and he did that sort of, his finisher was a splash, but one of those splashes where they kind of jump straight up in the air, like vertical.
Oh, yeah.
Like vertical, because they don't want to actually, like, exert themselves. Yeah, so he was, I guess. Yeah, no, they didn't really have any resident fat guys, you know, especially, I'm trying to think in terms of heels, too. Because actually a lot of the guys were just guys that are really in good shape.
Yeah.
You know, either they were legends or you had your guys like Johnny Gunn and Jimmy Powers and what's his face? Scott Putski, or a.k.a. Conan 2000.
Yeah.
Guys that are in just great shape. You know, and then you had the Freebirds in there too, which was weird. It must have been just before Doc Hendricks became a thing. You know, like, he just decided, you know, Michael Hayes just started wrestling there, and he brought in Jimmy Garvin, and, you know, it was just kind of weird, because Jimmy Garvin just cut his hair, so he kind of has, like, this mom haircut.
Oh.
You know, and he just looks weird.
I'm going to have to watch more of this footage, because I never saw the Freebirds in it.
Yeah. Well, what happens is, like, Michael Hayes debuts, and he's like, hey, you know, he's doing his promos, and, you know, being Michael Hayes and shit, and he's like, yeah, well, I got a surprise from Bad Street coming, and then he brings out what's his face, you know, Jimmy Garvin, and I don't know how long it lasted, obviously, because there's only one tag team champion holder in the promotion.
Yeah.
Greg Valentine and Tommy Rich as Luscious Johnny Tommy Rich, not Wildfire Tommy Rich.
Yeah.
And
were they managed by Rico Suave?
They were managed by Rico Suave. They were part of his family. Yeah. Did you also know the Road Warriors were in the AWF?
Yeah, I remember them being there.
The Road Warriors showed up,
and they had the red shoulder pads.
They did. Yeah, they had their WWE LOD shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And who else was in there?
I remember they had a manager named Boogaloo Brown.
Who, the Road Warriors?
No, there was just a manager there in general.
So. I missed Boogaloo Brown.
Yeah,
the only managers that I was aware of was. Was Rico Suave and what's his face? Sheik Adnan El-Casey.
Yeah, Sheik Adnan El-Casey was like the only like legit manager they had. Then they had like Rico Suave and Boogaloo Brown and other like reject managers that I've never heard of. And Blacktop Bully was managed by a woman named Big Mama.
Right. Was it the no, and I think she was the Big Mama of Jimmy Valiant fame.
Oh, okay.
I think it was the same woman.
Oh.
I don't know much about her other than she was just known as Big Mama.
And I believe Honky Tonk Man had a woman with him.
Right,
he had a Peggy Sue. Like that's because that's what he does.
I didn't get to see Honky Tonk. I think there was certain. It was around for. It was around for a few years. So like there were some faces where it didn't have certain guys. Like Terry Taylor was an announcer with Mick Karch.
Okay.
But then at one point he got replaced by Lord Alfred Hayes.
Yeah.
And then they had like a female lady interviewer,
mm-hmm.
and she got replaced by Missy Hyatt at some point. There's actually, if you can find it, maybe I'll have to post this on the page too, because you should watch all this because there's some stuff in there that's really like it's not great, but it's surprising for 1994
yeah.
or 95. Just something like maybe a little bit of. Kayfabe breaking, or not kayfabe breaking so much as it is just, you know, like pot shots at, like, for instance, like at one point, I don't know who it is. Maybe it's Bruce Pritchard. Who knows? Somebody, they're doing the commentary, and all of a sudden, somebody just gets on the microphone. And it's like, hang on, who's this? And it's like, let me tell you something, brother. And it's just some guy doing like a really bad Hogan impersonation.
Oh.
Or somebody's doing like a Savage impersonation, or somebody's doing a Flair impersonation. And then they run off, and then whatever. And then Terry Taylor's like, who was that guy? How did he get in here? You know? So they do that. And then there's actually this one really. And I don't even know if it was supposed to be an angle or whatever the hell it was, but so there's this interview with after a match with Jimmy Powers and Johnny Gunn. They're a tag team. They're the hot man tag team of the promotion, emphasized by Johnny Gunn walking out, and you know, a girl like who maybe was like 16, 17. Maybe even feels even younger, like jumps on him and starts like, and he's hugging her and he's like, hey, I'm Johnny Gunn, you know, and then the announcer's like, you know, people are calling the AWF offices asking, is he married? Can we go on a date with him? And so they have this interview with this woman. Their woman's like talking to Johnny Gunn. She's like, you know, oh my God, you're so, you know, the women love you. What's going, you know, what are you guys here to do? What are you here to do at AWF? And he's like, yo, let me tell you something. There's actually a lot of that real quick. There's a lot of interviews start with, let me tell you something.
Oh, okay. That's a good way to start an interview.
Let me tell you something. And they are telling you. And that actually reminds me. Sir Oliver Humperdinck was also a manager in AWF.
Oh, okay.
He managed, I believe it was Bob Orton.
I remember Bob Orton being in there.
Bob Orton was the champ.
But I don't remember Oliver Humperdinck with him.
Yeah, he actually, in the tournament, he helps Bob Orton defeat Chris Adams.
Oh, okay.
So you'll.
Yeah. By the time I started watching it, it was already the finals of the tournament. So I missed the whole, and he wasn't there for the finals. So,
Humperdinck?
Yeah.
No, maybe not. Maybe he decided to jump ship. But
yeah.
But anyway, so this interview, right? And so they're talking to Johnny Gunn, and the girl's just, and so then she goes, okay, Jim Powers, what do you have to say? And Jim Powers is like, well, she's like, you know what? We don't have time right now. So we're done with this interview, and we'll have to talk to you another time. And it literally just ends like that. And Jim Powers is like, what am I doing? And it's like, wait, is this supposed to be a thing where he only gets to like, he doesn't get to talk when Johnny Gunn's around? And then that's how they develop this. Whatever, I don't know. You have to see it though. It's pretty good. I definitely recommend AWF. It is a surprisingly fun watch.
Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely cool. I liked it. I was really bummed when it went off the air.
Well, yeah, because it sucks because they run out of money for something like that. I mean, that's just something good to have around.
Yeah, I was just really bummed when that went away because it wasn't on very long, or I didn't know about it very long. I only caught like maybe like a couple months worth of episodes, and then maybe it was towards the end, and then that was it.
Yeah,
and it was too bad because I really enjoyed it.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have any other wrestling things you wanted to share that
I just wanted to go into. Around that time, maybe shortly after, there was another very, very short-lived promotion called the WXO.
Oh, I remember WXO.
Yeah, and they only had like 3 episodes, and I was really bummed after that ended.
Was that the one where, what's his face, Johnny Ace did that promo that they make fun of sometimes?
Yeah.
Where he's like, man from Japan, check it out, you know, whatever it is. And I think also, what's his face, Adam Pearce, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, former NWA champion in the California area out here. He and now current trainer at the NXT. He used to wrestle on there, and he had lots of hair back then.
Oh.
So it was very strange.
And I remember there was a tag team named Generation X.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I could talk about AWF all day, to be honest. I could probably do another 30 minutes on an AWF and probably call it. I mean, because I could just be like, oh, yeah, and then the Samoans were there, but it was Samu and Tonga Kid or whatever I was saying. It wasn't, you know, and then they had like a random Samoan, and then, you know, they had Nails was there. My fucking Nails. Jesus Christ. Real quick, Nails. So I didn't realize until maybe yesterday, and I'm dumb for not realizing this, but they modulated his voice in the WWE.
Yeah.
Because then he's in AWF and he's talking. He's like, I'm Nails and I'm going to get, you know, whatever. it is not nearly as threatening.
Yeah.
And it's been, and real quick, I just want to point out, what the hell happened to Kevin Kelly? You know, the guy that was Nails. Like, what happened to him from being like, do you remember him from the AWA?
No.
Oh, okay. So then maybe this conversation would, this part of the conversation doesn't really make sense. Because
flat out, no. Nah. I just remember he was Nails, and then he went to WCW, and he was the Convict for a little while, and then
I think he was the Convict for like one match.
Yeah. Rumor has it Eric Bischoff only hired him because he loved the fact that he choked out Vince McMahon. That's like the big rumor going on back then.
Well, that has to be. Why else would you hire him?
Yeah, and then after that, like he showed up in the AWF, and then that was the end of him.
And then
he appeared on a T-shirt that you own.
Yeah, then a couple years ago I bought his shirt, and that's how, and it all came full circle.
Yeah,
I bought a shirt that I can't fit in right now because T-shirt, like if you buy an XL, I don't think he had double XL. Maybe he did. I don't know. I have to get into shape so I can wear it.
Yeah, that's my thing too. Like, there's so many cool T-shirts I want to wear, and I can't buy them because I'm double XL, and a lot of times the store is out of double XL.
Well, the problem is also double XL is not necessarily for me, at least in my case. I have a longer torso, So double XL, you know, yeah, it's wider,
but it's not longer.
Yeah, so it doesn't really, you know, make sense to wear like a crop top nail shirt. To a wrestling event out here, but I want to represent it. I'm actually very very eager to do that at some point. So let's take a break. You ready to take a break?
I am ready to take that break, and then we will come back and we are going to talk about Wrestling World from March of 1999, Stately Wayne Manor. Can't wait.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence. And it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
All right, we're back here on I Could Talk Kayfabe with our book for this week. It is Wrestling World from March 1999.
1999, you Attitude Era Monday Night War fans. And It features predominantly on the cover Steve Austin versus Goldberg. Who's number one?
Well, it's kind of confusing because you look at this cover and when you send me a picture of this, and I was like, how do I know this is a Wrestling World?
Yeah.
Because it says very small up here, Wrestling World. And then the big headline, you know, on the cover is Steve Austin versus Goldberg.
That's how big, like, that was in the 90s. Like, who was better, Steve Austin versus Goldberg? It was so big that Wrestling World made their font that much smaller. You know what? It's actually pretty smart on their part because Steve Austin versus Goldberg was, like, who would win? Who was, like, it was the dream match.
Well, also, too, let's put it this way. If you're a younger wrestling fan in the 90s,
yeah,
in the 1999, and you're walking through the market you know, and you see this magazine front and center, you want this magazine.
Totally.
It has the absolute, some of the most absolute biggest stars. I mean, definitely in Austin's case, the biggest star, well, I guess Goldberg too, the biggest stars of that era.
Yeah.
On a magazine saying they're fighting each other. Like, you even, it's just, there is colors and there's, you know, just, you're just who's number one, and you got Goldberg on the left and Austin on the right wearing the Stone Cold University shirt, which I don't know, was that actually a WWF shirt? I think it had to
have been. Yeah, it had to have been.
I feel like I never saw that very much. But so they have that, and then, you know, they have an interview with Goldberg, and, you know, they're kind of have like an expose on Austin and all this stuff in here, man. It's crazy.
That was the dream match. That was the match that never happened. Because by the time Goldberg came to WWE, Steve Austin was done.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's too bad. Because I think, you know, it would have made a lot of money for everybody.
It would have made a lot of money. I don't think the match would have been very good.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure.
I don't think any match with Goldberg's very good.
No, I don't either. Yeah. I am. I'll be honest. I do not care much for Goldberg, especially this past run.
I never cared for Goldberg, even in his prime. I never liked him. I never got into it.
I was not nearly as into Goldberg as other people were. Yeah. I mean, I dug him, but I didn't dig him like I dug, you know, Chris Jericho or Chris Benoit or Eddie Guerrero, you know, all those kind of guys.
Yeah, I never got on board with Goldberg. I got on board when he came back for this run, only like at the very beginning. I was like, oh, that's really cool. But I thought he'd be like one match and that was it. And then it turned into a whole thing. And I was like, oh, just go away already.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was for the Royal Rumble. And then he wrestled at WrestleMania. He was the champ.
He's the champ.
Oh, my God. Wow. He was the champ going into WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Wow.
In 2017.
That just depressed the hell out of me.
Yeah. In 2017, he was the champ.
That's terrible.
Even though his prime was maybe, holy shit, 20 years earlier.
Yeah.
The fuck?
Unbelievable.
I know. Come on, man. Come on. I mean, seriously, what the hell? Dude, that, I don't know. I just, I guess they made much money off of that, the WWE did, but why would you think that in 2017 that people are that hard up for Goldberg?
Who did he beat for the title again?
Kevin Owens.
He beat Kevin. That's right, because Kevin Owens and then Jericho had their. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I was already not feeling well when we started recording this, and now I'm just feeling even worse.
Man.
Holy cow. Why did I blocked all that out of my memory?
Yeah, now like, it's back, and now it feels bad.
Oh, my God.
So.
We were doing this podcast all year. We ever talk about this?
No,
all my feelings are coming to the
we don't talk about current stuff.
No, we don't. All my feelings are coming to the surface here about this, and it's just awful.
It is awful.
I felt like they've been repressed for so long, and now they're just coming out of the surface. And it's oh my God, really? 2017 Goldberg's still. I'm just glad he's gone.
I mean, I think we are 90% certain that he is done.
Yeah.
And he has no reason to come back because he is 50, over 50. He has all the money in the world. His kid got to see him wrestle because that was his one thing. He's like, I want my son to see me wrestle. And it happened.
Go to Goodwill and get a VCR and play him some of your VHS tapes if you want him to. Jeez.
Oh, I got to see me live.
He's got to see him live and in HD. So.
But I got to see. He's got to see me beat somebody. He's got to see me hold a belt that means something.
Oh, my God.
Jerk.
Oh my God! I'd rather see Batista come back and get another title.
Batista. Batista was still over. You know, like he was in his. You know, he started. You know, was you know reached probably his biggest point in like in 2005.
Yeah,
but he was still going strong like up until 2010, 2011. You know, and then you know whatever. You know, and then he can't. You know, he had that run, you know, that brief run or whatever. But I mean, it's still cool to see him.
Yeah. I always liked Batista. I didn't like him as the main event guy, but I always thought Batista was just one of those guys who's like, he has a place. You know, like he's cool. I like him.
Yeah.
I didn't like him as world champ, but I liked him. Like he was all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got a funny Batista story too.
Do you want to tell it real quick?
Yeah, I'll tell it real quick. So my buddy lives over in the Washington, D.C. area where Batista lives. And he was at the gym working out. And Batista was in there lifting weights. Like, he was benching like 400 pounds. And when he was done, my buddy goes up to him, "Nah, you don't need to take the weights off, Batista. I'm just going to go ahead and take over." And Batista, I guess, just gave him a look like he was going to kill him. I guess he can't take a joke. So,
oh, come on, he's Drax. Drax couldn't take a joke.
I get Drax could. Batista, no, not so much.
Big Dave. What was that? I was thinking about a Buffalo connection to this too, because there was this whole thing where we used to. This is only interesting to a few people, but I'm going to talk about it anyways. We used to make fun of Tom Galley.
Oh, yeah.
Because
the old no DQ host.
Because apparently he had some sort of. You talked about being friends with Batista or something about him.
Oh,
Batista.
Yeah, he commented on. I was the one who called him out on it.
Oh, okay.
On the no DQ website forum. He said something like, "Hey, I had just talked to Dave," and then I called him out. I said, "I didn't realize you were on a first name basis with Batista," and then everyone was like on him after that.
Well, as they should have, because that's the thing. Big Mosh and I, we would just sit there and just go, you know, like Big Dave, baby, what's going on, Tom Galley, TG, ODQ,
yeah. Me and my original...
Here's my headshot.
My original roommate, Alan, we still talk about that to this day. We talk about Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's for you Buffalo people.
Yeah.
So let's get into this book here. Yeah. So basically, I want to point out real quick this weird... I don't know if it's weird, but it's just a very low budget ad for a low budget promotion.
Yeah.
For the Stars of Slammers.
And they got some interesting VHS titles. You have More Pain, New Blood, and Pain and Punishment.
Okay, so
Pain is the theme.
Slammers Wrestling Gym, based out in Studio City.
Oh,
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. PO Box. So, but you know, Studio City, nonetheless. I wonder if this website's still around.
I doubt it.
And they have
it's probably a porn site now.
Yeah, oh, it's definitely the word Slammers. Definitely somebody picked that up. But so basically, this ad just has like a bunch of these white on white cutout. Of you know spot shots from wrestling and you know whatever, and you got this one dude that looks like I think this is George Animal Steel. Yeah,
and then this guy looks like D. David Schultz.
That's not gonna say Dr. D. Having a dude putting on a headlock, and there's blood, and it's you know, and there's apparently you know, all sorts of stuff. There's one of these tapes is called Bakersfield Brawls.
Oh, in a Bakersfield Brawl.
And they have a whole bunch of stuff here.
Yearbook 92. Oh,
I kind of want to see this.
The SWF.
Does anybody have any? If you have any Slammers tapes, let us know. Maybe I'll have to check these out.
So I'm guessing the SWF is Slammers Wrestling Federation.
Yeah,
this is the Slammers Wrestling Gym.
Yes, and Studio City.
But this is from 97, or this magazine's from 99, and they're advertising yearbook 92. Oh. So they were around a while.
Oh, copy.
There has to be some footage out there of the Slammers.
$35 for each VHS cassette. Fuck that.
Actually, that's a bargain.
In 1998, you think so?
Yeah, because I see in the back of all the After mags, like they were charging like $55.
But that was back in the 80s.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, you know, 90s, you know, you could still get tapes pretty cheap.
I remember going to ECW events and spending some money on RF.
Well,
videos.
That's the thing. Yeah, you had us, but yeah, I have a handful of. I bought maybe one or two tapes from there.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, Music City Wrestling, this is a weird article because it basically is written from the perspective that Burt Prentice puts together these really affordable and, you know, just cool wrestling shows in Tennessee. And Bill Barron's, or whatever it is, I think, yeah, it's Tennessee. And Bill Barron's, promoter, and these are both, you know, people that are still around today. Bill Barron's is like, why would you do that? Why would you make it so affordable and stuff and blah, blah, blah. And it just has all these random pictures, including pictures of the people that wrestle there, including, we'll get to this guy in a second here, but just want to point out Colorado Kid Mike Rapata. Do you remember him?
I don't know who he is.
He was going to be like the next king shit at one point.
Was he?
Yeah, he was supposed to be like a big deal at one point, like because he was the NWA champion, you know, in the mid '90s.
I thought Dan Severn just held the title the whole decade.
No. I think he at one point this kid had it for a minute.
This guy beat Dan Severn?
He didn't beat Dan Severn. Oh, okay. I think at some point Dan Severn just stopped having it.
Oh, okay.
Because Dan Severn was just like, whatever, I don't need to do this.
It was when TNA started. That's when Dan Severn stopped having the belt.
No, that had to be before that.
No, that's what like. He didn't want to go to TNA, so they're like, all right, you're not the champion.
So they gave it to Ken Shamrock.
So they gave it to Ken Shamrock.
That's another weird thing. Ken Shamrock is the very first TNA world champion.
Yeah.
That is a trivia. And he beat, was it Ron Killings, I think, in a match?
Yeah,
Ron Killings beat him.
Well, they had like a battle royal, and then it came down to like the last two, and they had a match, if I remember correctly. I know there was a battle royal involved.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like a Royal Rumble rules battle royal. It wasn't really a traditional battle royal.
Right.
And Derek Wilde was in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I don't remember who else.
Not Mike Rapata. He was not in it. But yeah, he was the champ at some point. He was the big shit. Yeah, him and his giant mullet. I guess at one point, though, his stock dropped very quickly because...
Should have never rose. Like, look at him.
Well, right. He looks like
an 80s jobber.
Well, he does. He looks like a spare Von Erich.
Yeah.
But basically what happened was he was in a tryout with WCW, or he was in like a WCW like squash match or something, or it was kind of like one of those Thunder matches or whatever, and it was against like Scott Hall, and Scott Hall roughed him up, and he complained about it, and then that was it. They didn't hear about Colorado Kid anymore. Go back to Colorado. And here's a picture of...
Skinny Kenny.
Skinny Kenny... Who says
it's a play on words because he's not skinny at all?
Yeah, because he hates fat. He says, I hate fat people, and he looks like Kenny Powers.
Yeah, he does look like Kenny Powers, only fatter.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So you have that, and it's just, you know, just kind of like a description of this event, and you got pictures of the matches. I like this guy's shirt here. This, what's this guy's name? Hot Rod Biggs. Mm-hmm. He has a shirt that says, Must suck to be you.
Oh, yeah.
Although, if you don't look at it properly, it looks like, you know, there's some dirty words on it. Who knows? So, okay. So, there are like a million Goldberg and Steve Austin articles in this book. So, if you bought...
It's a little crazy.
If you bought this book in 1999 or 98, and you were like...
Yeah,
and you wanted to get your fill of Goldberg and Austin, well, you definitely did.
They have the Goldberg and Austin centerfold pull out too. It's pretty, I didn't pull it out yet, but I will, and hang it right next to my Shawn Michaels poster in my spare room. But yeah, we have putting the gold on Goldberg. And is this the interview with him?
It's kind of like an interview slash, like, you know, not really an interview, but more of just like they followed him around.
Yeah,
like
they have an official promo photo of him.
Official promo photo. They start off this article with his real shoot name, William Scott Goldberg.
Oh, they went middle name too.
Yeah. And
too bad he's not like a junior, because that would have been full on shoot, like William Scott Goldberg Jr. Or the third. That would have been cool.
And so this girl writes it, Tara Catherine Gwynn.
Is his son William Scott Goldberg Jr.?
Yeah, I don't know what his son's name is.
Oh, that's too bad.
Goldie Goldberg. Jim Goldberg.
That's a good name, Goldie Goldberg.
That's a good jobber name.
Yeah.
That actually would be if tennis, I'm blanking on it, the Southeastern Championship Wrestling from Tennessee was around in 1998, which probably was, but nobody knew it. But if it was around, they'd be like, they would have a Goldie Goldberg in there.
What if they had Berg Goldberg?
Berg Goldberg.
The Nordic version of Goldberg.
Berg Gold?
Berg Goldberg.
Will Bergen? Goldberg?
Borg.
Boldgerg?
Yeah.
So basically it's just like, man, he's a big dude and he's, you know, he seems like a good dude and he's, you know, just experienced, but he carries himself and blah, blah, blah.
And you got a nice photo of fans holding up Goldberg. Like, they all have their own letter, and they hold it up, and it's, like, out of order. It's great.
It's sort of in order. I think it's not being held up properly, but it's in order. So, hey, Van Hammer making an appearance.
Oh, Van Hammer.
Or just Hammer.
Yeah. Hammer.
He just so Goldberg just won the world title. So I guess it's basically just kind of they're just using a lot of stock photos from this thing here. A
lot of pause on the VHS deck and take a photo of the screen and upload it to the magazine. Yeah. I think that's what they're doing here.
It's a pretty good shot though. I don't see no glare.
Yeah, they did it very well. It's black and white too though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there's a photo of Goldberg posing with fans and he's giving somebody bunny ears. Or is that the peace sign? I don't know.
He's giving the peace sign. He's got his fanny pack, yeah.
Yeah, he does have his fanny pack.
Yeah.
You're not a professional wrestler if you don't have a fanny pack, as far as I'm concerned.
The Austin Files is an article here.
By Twig Martin.
Twig Martin. Twiggy, that's Twiggy Ramirez. I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's Lenny and Twiggy.
Lenny and Twiggy. And I like this design here. Well, it's just because I don't like it. I just think it's... Cokie.
They have like clip art of manila envelopes with giant letters A on them.
Yeah. For A for Austin.
For the Austin. That's the Austin Files.
Yeah. If you see a letter, if you see a manila envelope with the letter A on it, it's about Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And you need to bring it to him.
Or bring it to Wrestling World.
Or bring it to Stately Wayne Manor. He needs he lost it.
Yeah.
There's three of them.
I'm sure he's got like his own copies though, but just to be sure.
He hasn't digitized them yet.
No. He's not on top of that
yet. He hasn't liked the internet, he says.
Yeah. But he's on Twitter. He tweets a lot.
I know.
I follow him. It's fun.
So basically this is kind of like one of those magazines though that talks about like how Steve Austin is like super violent and like going hardcore and he's, you know, he's got destructive pattern of behavior and blah, blah, blah. It, really nothing that you don't already know. Yeah. You know, I'll just call it like this. So that, and then
there's some color photos of Austin and Goldberg in the ring. Then a Nitro Girls color photo, which is always lovely.
Yeah. Nitro Girls.
I couldn't tell you which one was which, like what their names were.
Well, I know who they are.
Okay.
This was easy.
All right.
So that's AC Jazz.
Okay.
That's Tao. That's Spice. And that's Kimberly. And I assume in the background is Fire.
Oh, is that Kimberly?
Yeah, it's Kimberly.
Oh.
It's easy.
Which one's married to Shawn Michaels?
She's not in this.
Oh.
She's not in it. That's Whisper.
Oh.
But she's not in this picture right here.
They didn't have to do much.
No.
They just had to get in the ring and dance a little.
Dance a little and clap their hands, get the fans pumped.
I mean, they were only dancing for like 30 seconds at a time at the most.
So yeah.
It didn't really matter. And then Scott Steiner screwed it all up and forced Kimberly to quit.
Well, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that kind of went on in terms of like angles and stuff that separated them.
Well, I think Scott Steiner was the straw that broke the Campbell's back.
Yeah.
Camel's back, not the Campbell.
Didn't he throw her out of a car?
No, it was just like
was that part of that angle?
I think it was part of the angle, but like there was like some her and DDP, I guess, were divorced at the time by then. And then, she went into the production truck and complained to Eric Bischoff about something. It wasn't anything, like, big or anything like that. She just had, like, a grievance she needed to address. And Scott Steiner was like, he's like, what the hell are you complaining about? Get the hell out of here, woman, or something like that. That was it. And then Kimberly left the promotion.
Was that when Steiner and DDP actually got into a fight?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was something.
It was something over that.
Yeah, because she went to Diamond Dallas and was like, "Yeah, he picked on me." And even though they weren't married anymore, he was like, he's going to defend her honor because that's the way he's a stand-up guy. But I think it's all blown over now, and DDP's doing his thing, and Scott Steiner owns the Shoney's, so it's
everyone. Did you know Scott Steiner's back in TNA?
Yeah.
In 2017?
Yeah, but I don't think he's wrestling right
now. No, he is wrestling.
Oh, wow.
He's wrestling. He's teaming with Josh Matthews.
Yeah. I thought he was just like mentoring him. I didn't realize he was actually wrestling.
Maybe he is. I haven't really paid attention, but I mean, I could see him wrestling.
Yeah.
I could see him
could see him calling people a fat bastard. That's what I want to see. So
you suck.
I want, like, they should have done it where he went. Well, who's he with? Who's he teaming
with? Josh Matthews.
So Josh Matthews like drives the Shoney's and is like, Scott Steiner's just in there like cleaning the buffet or whatever. And he's like, listen.
He's refilling the garbanzo beans in this hell bar.
He's like, listen, Scott, I need you to come help me in TNA. And Scott like looks at him. He's like, I'm in. And then they just drive to Orlando together.
Apparently some fans of my other show, Worst Collection Ever, have emailed us to tell us that they have been to the Shoney's.
Oh, okay.
And that there is quite a bit of wrestling memorabilia there. And I am certain he probably gets a lot of people that just are passing through that are like, hey, man, remember Scott Steiner? He owns this place.
I'm surprised that, the corporate offices...
I want to go, by the way.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that the corporate offices of Shoney's allow him to hang wrestling merchandise in the restaurant.
Yeah. Are you going to tell him no? You could.
Yeah, you could. But like, if Shoney's is corporate,
yeah,
it's just a franchise. They're all supposed to look the same. You're not supposed to have like Scott Steiner like memorabilia hanging up.
Mm.
Maybe I don't know. There was that story about how the pizza place in Michigan, how Rick Steiner and Scott Steiner would order from the same pizza place, and Rick Steiner always had to say, "This is Rick Steiner. This is Rick Steiner," because Scott would never tip the delivery guy and they'd always fuck with his pizza.
No.
So Rick Steiner had to like reiterate that it was Rick Steiner ordering.
I never heard that story.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. What's his face told me that story? Johnny Swinger.
This is a long article, so I'm not going to really get into this.
We got to talk about who the panel is.
Oh, yes. Okay.
The panel.
So the mighty panel here, you have...
There it is.
Steve Ciccarelli. That's Italian.
Ciccarelli.
Is that Ciccarelli?
Ciccarelli, yeah.
Okay, and then you have Ernie Santilli.
Uh-huh.
El Tessitore.
Uh-huh.
And Stately Wayne Manor.
Yeah.
And I'm going to imagine that at least three of those people are all Stately Wayne Manor. And they're all, but they all have their different takes on basically all these different aspects of Steve Austin versus Goldberg.
Yeah, they break it down into a point system, and like whoever has the most points at the end is going to win the match.
It's like the AWF, but in print form.
Yeah. And so they go like with experience. You know, just stuff like that. And
I do like some of these things that our boy here, Stately Wayne Manor, has to say, because they're talking about experience, and they're like, well, you know, he's like, about in regards to Austin, he's like, Austin was trained by janitor. I mean, Chris Adams. So right there, you have to deduct two years from an experience count just for the time it makes to... the time it takes to make up for that bad start.
I don't know. Why is he shitting on gentleman Chris Adams?
I don't know. Maybe he can tell us.
Yeah.
What has he got a problem with there? His are the best ones in here, though, too, because he's really like just going in on like a lot of random things. Like, I think he likes Austin a lot.
Yeah, as he should. Yeah. He should like Austin more than Goldberg.
And he has this thing here where he's like, well, Steve Austin, you know... here, this is about technical skills, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to read this because I like this. I'd have to rate Steve Austin among the top wrestlers in the world by 1988 standards. Unfortunately, fortunately for Steve Arino, this is 1998. And as much as I kept harping on Tequila Tongue to expand his repertoire while I was making him the star he is today, Austin was too thick-headed to listen. Too thick-headed and plastered, that is. I even invented some moves I thought he could relate to, like the Heineken hug.
Oh.
The Yingling fling.
Oh, Yingling getting a mention. Yeah.
Too bad he didn't spell it right.
Oh, well, I don't think that's on him. That's on the editor.
Oh, that is. Well, he is the editor.
Oh.
And I like this one, the Pabstplex.
Oh, the Pabstplex.
The Pabstplex. So, yeah.
I don't think Austin ever drank Heineken, Yingling, or Pabst on television.
No, I think he only drank Bud White or cans that look like Bud Light or Budweiser and are actually Sprite.
I think Miller Lite once in a while. And in Canada, he drank Canadian beer like Molson. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, the thing is, I mean, to Austin's credit, though, I mean, he had to change his style up because... you know, he got injured.
Is Yingling even available in cans?
Probably.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not available in California. So.
Is it not?
I've never had it other than bottles.
Oh. Yingling's pretty good.
Yeah.
Nice drink beer. It's pretty good.
They have the Yingling flavored sausage at Ralph's, but they don't have the Yingling beer.
Yingling flavored sausage.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Yingling sausage, and they have that at Ralph's.
So another thing here from Stately Wayne Manor talking about Austin's power. He's like, oh, yeah, Austin's got a lot of power. Wind power. I guess that's to be expected with a typical Texan diet of beans for breakfast, lunch, and dinner on top of 2 or 3 cases of Steve Weiser he puts away every day. Steve's the only guy I know who has to put odor eaters down to the back of his shorts. Whatever you do, do not go along with him when he says, pull my thumb. So...
that's the old gag of people who eat beans fart.
It's all about Steve Austin's gas here.
I didn't know that Steve Austin, all he ate was beans. That's kind of...
well, look at his physique. That's a bean physique right there.
I guess so, yeah.
Lean and bean. So, yeah, so basically what it comes down to is...
gold. It's a long article, too. It's a long article.
Well, it's the thing.
It takes up most of the magazine.
Well,
So it lives up to the hype of the magazine.
It lives up to the hype. Yes,
yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
And shit, who wins?
Austin wins.
Okay, yeah, wait. Yeah. Austin wins.
Yeah, Austin wins.
Austin wins, as he should.
Because Goldberg's still technically a rookie.
Yeah. Goldberg's still... green, and Austin has been wrestling at this point for, you know, 10 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, he gets the nod. I don't see how it would be any other way. So, actually, quick article here about heavy metal and wrestling.
Yeah, two of your favorite things.
Yes, and I am familiar with most of this stuff, except for a band in here called Corpse Vomit.
Oh.
Who apparently
used... you missed that band.
Yeah, I missed that guy, those guys out of Chicago.
Oh.
Apparently. Because they're into ECW and they would cut themselves with razor blades.
Oh.
And actually, this is a good line here. It says, Corpse Vomit are devoted fans of ECW, even cutting themselves with razor blades, parentheses, as some ECW and WWF stars are rumored to do intentionally during matches.
Oh, they're rumored.
See, almost breaking kayfabe, but he keeps it real. Yeah, but we get some shots here of Stuck Mojo, who are, you know, the majority of Stuck Mojo now. The band is is basically Fozzy. That's Chris Jericho's band. And then we got a picture of Wasp drummer Stett Holland, just like whatever random metalheads you can find to put into these things. And I got Motorhead, which actually this is interesting. So before Motorhead did the theme songs for Triple H, you know, the 5 million theme songs they did on the ECW metal compilation. So at one point in the 98, 99, some company put out an ECW compilation of bands covering
the theme songs.
Theme songs.
Yeah, they
and
did,
just like
Enter
stuff
Sandman.
That's inspired. So Motorhead did Enter Sandman.
I had that CD.
Yeah, I had it too.
It's probably in my shed right now, actually. But I had to go look for it.
Then a band called Grinspoon did Prong Snap Your Finger, Snap Your Neck, which is the theme song for Just Incredible. And that actually, my brother Brian became a big fan of Grinspoon, and they're an Australian band that's still around, that he became a big fan of theirs because of that, because you discovered them on the CD.
That was a good cover.
Yeah, it was actually, it's really good. There's a few other weird things. There's Bruce Dickinson covering the Scorpions. He does the Zoo.
Yeah, that's another good cover.
That one's all right.
Yeah. Who did the Walk? The Rob Van
band
Dan?
Called Kilgore.
Yeah, Kilgore.
I'm not familiar as much with Kilgore, but they did Walk, and then what's another weird one on there? I'm trying to think.
What I liked about that CD was Sandman had already jumped to WCW by the time it came out, and they were just like, he's going on the cover. Too bad.
Well, they had to. Yeah, they had to.
They're not going
to
change the cover at that point.
Did he make it back to WCW? He made it back to ECW by the end.
Yeah, he did.
I always forget that he was only in like WCW for maybe like what? Like a year?
Yeah, maybe a year.
Well, he got himself some action figures out of it too. There was a Hack action figure. Hardcore Hack.
WCW never paid their guys for their royalties for their action figures.
Really?
Yeah. Did
Johnny Swinger tell you that too?
No. Like if you ever... like Chris Jericho used to like complain about it on the internet, and then if you ever took the action figure to the store, like whomever it was, they scanned on the receipt, it would just show Hulk Hogan. So Hulk Hogan,
I did not know that.
Hulk Hogan got everyone's money. Yeah, even Perry Saturn said he never saw a dime from the action figures.
Perry Saturn had an action figure? I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh yeah, everyone had an action figure back.
Not
then.
Everyone. I know Raven had a few.
Yeah,
I know. You know, there was a obviously because Toy Biz made them.
Yeah,
and Toy Biz, made a lot of awesome comic book action figures back in the day, and so yeah, I guess that there was a Kevin Rodman one too. He got one.
Yeah, they had a lot of action figures. Like, that's when I stopped collecting because there was just so many coming out and I was overwhelmed and I was like, it's better I just stop.
Well, ECW had action figures,
too. Yeah, ECW had action figures.
They had little shitball figures.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and then actually one of my favorite things here is, and they because they don't, because of what they don't mention, at least I didn't see it in the article, is so at one point, they talk about this compilation that Steve Austin created about he put out, there was a CD you've probably seen it. It's called Stone Cold Metal, and it's just basically him picking a bunch of random classic rock tracks and things that he likes, and he put it on a CD. And one of those songs was Perfect Strangers by Deep Purple, which is an awesome song. And the reason why everybody should know that song is because that was Shane Douglas's theme song in ECW for pretty much his entire time there. And not one mention of that in here. So we get out. But I don't know. It's just a fluff piece for that. Hulk Hogan article. I didn't even read this. It's just a lot of
It's just Hulk Hogan rubbish.
Hulk Hogan's doing things. I'm like, yeah, he sure is.
Yeah, he's the champ and he's going to be the champ. So
I'm going to let you talk about this.
So we got the Renegade Wrestling is heating up in Southern Ontario. And it's kind of cool because they talk about they just talk about what was going on in Southern Ontario at the time, which was, if I was just a few years older, I would have been going to these shows that they were talking about. But unfortunately, I wasn't. I was too young. Actually, by 99, I should have been going to these shows.
Yeah, but when I was being the wrestling fan that I was in 1999, I was very, I think it was just because of friends I hung out with, because a lot of my friends weren't as big of wrestling fans as myself. And so the only time I went to, went to wrestling shows was either when WWF, WCW or ECW came to town.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't, but I mean, there was probably so much independent stuff that was farting around and, you know, Lockport and Amherst or whatever.
Yeah.
And I never went to that stuff.
There was, I remember Hamilton had a lot of indie wrestling shows and they featured a lot of big name guys and they kind of talk about it in here, but, Sweet Daddy Siki and Whipper Billy Watson through the 70s. But Steve Titan. I don't know who that was.
Steve Titan.
But they talk about the All-Nighters here, which were a pretty big deal in Southern Ontario and in Western New York in the early aughts. And one of the All-Nighters was married to Beth Phoenix.
Was that Robbie Knight?
What was it? Or Joey Nightwing.
Joey Nightwing or Robin, I don't know. Something.
One of them was married to Beth Phoenix, and then they wrestled in ESW, which is still going on today, by the way. ESW is still a thing.
I remember the thing about ESW is that at one point they started bringing in like outside guys.
Yeah.
Because before, they were always the one that didn't bring in outside guys.
They only brought in guys. ESW... It was a promotion. It still is a
Empire
promotion.
State Wrestling.
Empire State Wrestling in Buffalo, where the majority of it, it's all local guys, which is great because they have like a roster of 30 local guys and everyone brings like 10 or 15 people and you have like a 500 seat audience. It's always full. So it's a great environment. But then they brought in the All-Nighters and they brought in other guys from outside to help beef up the card a little bit and give their guys some experience. And it actually turned into a really, really good promotion. It's still going on. Yeah. And they're drawing over 1,000 people a show.
Yeah.
Pretty close to it, if not. And they're good. They're good times.
Johnny Puma.
Johnny Puma. Our boy Johnny Puma was the big man on campus of that promotion. But this was before that time, and I wanted to bring up the fact that they talk about Quan Chang in this article. You read it earlier. I can't find where the Quan Chang
mentioned it. It's right here.
I like cruiserweight Dane Jarrus and the master Quan Chang, a 215-pound heavyweight who devastates his opponents with his dazzling finishing maneuver, the Hong Kong Death Drop. And Quan Chang and I, really good friends. Quan Chang, actually, he, along with a couple other guys from the Southern Ontario area, like, they took me in the ring and trained me a little bit. They showed me some bumps and how to run the ropes. We spent an entire day together, and Quan actually taught me how to lock up. I didn't know there was an art to locking up, and Quan actually taught me that. So,
what's the art to locking up?
I don't even remember anymore. It's been so long since.
I want to know.
It's been so long. No, he just taught me the correct way to lock up and how to circle the ring. And the person with the more experience should always initiate the lockup. And he showed me the correct way of doing it. Because if you do it wrong, you're just going to slap the guy in the face, and it's not going to look good.
Well, the way, yeah, especially when you watch wrestling too, like, you watch how people, you know, they lock up with like such force.
Yeah,
you know, they had to go into it, but it's like, you know, there's a certain,
yeah. And he showed it, yeah, to me, and
science to it.
And then there was a show that we did in BCW, Buffalo Championship Wrestling, on like it was like July 4th in Lockport, where Killer Kumpf and Quan Chang were the tag champs, but Killer Kumpf was injured. He had like a sore back, so I took Killer Kump's place. I was thrown in the ring just as the ring announcer. And so Quan Chang is my one tag team partner I've ever had in wrestling. And our victory was over the guy who is now known as Luke Harper. So
That's right.
There, yeah, you go.
So you have a win over Luke Harper.
Him and Troy the Boy Buchanan teamed up against Quan Chang and myself. And we were victorious. By we, I mean Quan did all the work. And I think I gave some low blows, and that was about it.
You're technically undefeated.
Yeah, I am. I'm 1-0.
Congrats.
I'm a former tag team champion, technically, as well. Because I defended the tag titles. But yeah, they talk about they talk about how WWF loaned guys to Ontario once in a while. Like Gold Dust would go show up over there, and Edge, because they you know, whatever, that's what they did. I guess they didn't see it as a threat, and it wasn't.
But their big ones were like, you know, they have like old school names like Bundy and Tito Santana
and Typhoon. I remember after a high school dance, we'd go to Canada, and I found a flyer. The big main event advertised for the Renegade Wrestling Federation was Earthquake versus Typhoon.
Oh, man.
And I remember wanting to go to it, and I never ended up going, and that was too bad.
Yeah.
Man, they even showed Tito Santana. So, yeah, there was a lot going on in Southern Ontario. And I want to say there might still be, but I doubt it. I don't know.
What, like, this promotion?
No, just in general. Like, the whole province, I think, is dead as far as indie wrestling goes.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
No, I'm certain. So let's just jump right to the ratings real quick. The ratings are at the end of this book. And the way that they do the ratings, they just kind of list a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, most popular, most hated.
Top 10 tag teams, top 10 managers.
See, by this time, the territories are dead, so you can't really do a top 10 by territory. So yeah, they just combine WWE and WCW, and they do top 10 popular and hated, which is kind of funny because the most hated, number two, is Vince McMahon. But yeah, how did Mark Mero get so high up in the most hated?
Well, maybe this is around the time when depending when this came out, he was, you know, still wreaking havoc on Sable.
Oh.
You know, so, because, you know, she's here, the top one, top valet.
Oh.
So it's a, you know, she's a big deal. Some of these ones I don't know here in these valets.
Awesome Amy?
Awesome Amy, Luscious Laura. I do not know her. Miss Patricia, I think she was an ECW one for like a minute. But, you know, you have your strongest, your best brawlers, which I find to be funny because you have
toughest and best brawlers, which is kind of weird. Ming is number one toughest, as he should be.
As he should be. But I think it's interesting because they have best brawlers, and number six is Rocco Rock.
Mm-hmm.
But he is not. But Johnny Grunge is nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
I find that to be interesting.
But Jesse James is number five.
Jesse James is number five. Well, he was a hardcore champ.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, real quick, top 10 tag teams, number nine is Sting and Conan. Because I guess they were both in the Wolfpack together, so
yeah, maybe
they teamed at some point. But and then you have, like, you know, some proper ratings here with the promotions. You know, you got your WWF, WCW, ECW, and light heavyweights and top 10 newcomers of this. Let's go this one real quick. So top 10 newcomers from 1999, Val Venus, Sean Stasiak, Edge, Darren Drozdoff, Horace, aka Horace Hogan, Johnny Swinger, Reese, Steve Blackman, and Teddy Hart.
I didn't know Teddy Hart made it to the point where he could be considered a top 10 newcomer.
Well, he was, I mean, he was such a hot prospect back in, back around this time. And then he just, you know, fucked it all up.
Yeah. But
that was pretty much, I remember him being at the ballpark brawl where he did a moonsault off the backstop of the Bison's backstop. And I think he was wrestling Derek Wilde.
Oh, okay. That was Derek Wilde.
He was wrestling Derek Wilde and he pretty much missed him.
Yeah.
But you know, they still had to sell it.
Yeah. Derek Wilde did a good job selling it, but yeah, he did miss him.
Yeah.
I remember that.
It's kind of like when, what's his face? There's somebody that always, like any of those 205 guys, like they do like giant moonsaults to the outside and it's always like the hand coming down on their face and they have to sell it. Like they got hit by their whole body. So
yeah. Well, that's Derek Wilde's fault for not being in the place where he should have been.
Get your shit together, Derek Wilde.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it for this book.
Yeah.
This Wrestling World book.
Yeah. Steve Austin versus Goldberg. Back cover has Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And I wanted to point out also that they have the on the front insert, they have Ken Shamrock, but this time he doesn't have a shamrock.
No, he doesn't. That's right. That's right. I forgot. But yeah. although his little placard thing is green.
It is still green, but there is no actual shamrock on this
one. Oh, okay.
Which is too bad because it gave his color pinups character, I thought. And there was a Ultimate Warrior, or just Warrior rather, pinup.
Yeah, it was just Warrior back then.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Yeah, R.I.P. Warrior and R.I.P. Wrestling World magazine, because it's no longer around either.
That's it for Wrestling World, March 1999. That's it for this week's show. You can check us out on Facebook.
Yeah, like our Facebook page.
I Could Talk Kayfabe.
Yeah, I Could Talk Kayfabe. Find us on the Twitters. Sweatpants Joe. I'm also on Instagram at that name.
And Angry Hero Sean at Instagram and Twitter. So, yeah.
Yeah, find us on anywhere where podcasts are found. And rate us 5 stars on iTunes. Please subscribe to us on iTunes.
Yeah, Apple Podcasts. Rate us 5 stars. Tell people about it. Share the links. And get the word out. We would really appreciate it. So, thanks for listening, folks, and we'll talk to you again next time. Bye.